This is The Dime, a 10-minute dive into the cannabis and hemp industry through trends, insights, predictions, and tangents.
What's up, guys? This is The Dime. As always, I've got my man, Callan Finney, here. And this week, we've got a special guest since we're doing Delta 8 Part 2. I've got Dr. Matt Moore with us to kind of break down Delta 8 and all the fun things about it. Matt, how you doing? Thanks for joining us. Can you share a little about your background and what you do in the space?
Hi, so I'm a principal scientist at a company called Venuvia Manufacturing. And we actually are licensed to make cannabinoids for the use for treating childhood epilepsy and also another one called Syndros, which has actually been marketed since the 80s. A lot of people don't know this, but THC has been legal for specific uses for cancer patients for nausea and for AIDS-related pain since the mid-80s. But it is a very, very hard to get prescribed drug. And obviously in recent years, that's become a little less so because they're allowing doctors to more kind of prescribe things off label because they say, well, you're the doctor and this is a drug that in other states and other countries has been seen to have an effect. So you can prescribe it off label, but Syndros is one that people are still pretty wary of. Some people say that they don't have the same kind of what you would call high experience, and that's like would be people who have taken samples and concentrated them down and had what is a pure THC experience, which most people are not accustomed to, and that can cause like a psychosis event. So, you know, interesting things out there in the cannabinoid world, but we've been there since, well, so we've been Venuvia since 2018 and making cannabinoids and working on expanding that, developing pathways forward into the synthetic routes for things like CBDV that are harder to come by out of the plant. If you wanted to isolate enough CBDV to essentially create the same market that CBD has, then you would be talking about growing millions of acres and isolating the CBDV away from the CBD and everything else that's in the plant. So synthetic is definitely going to be the way to go for the miners, at least until, you know, they engineer enough yeast in batches to make it easier.
So let's talk a little further about that synthetic, right? And to kind of back it up a little bit, can I buy a Delta 8 edible online right now?
Well, it's interesting what the DEA has to say about D8 because it is an analog, but it's not Delta 9. But it's kind of weird in the way that the Analog Act is written. So I would not want to have anything shipped across state lines with Delta 8 in it because that's where federal law comes into play. If you're buying something at a store, then I don't see any reason why not. That's perfectly legal. Well, that's perfectly not illegal.
I definitely see the gray lines you're talking about, but to confirm, when you take a Delta 8 edible, you would get high.
Well, so it doesn't bind quite as strong as Delta 9 THC to the receptor. And that is what essentially potentiates what you would consider your high. And so while it doesn't bind quite as strong, it still does bind in the same way. And so it will get you high. You just need more of it. It's a relatively non-toxic compound, so that's not a hyper concern. But the more concern that I would have is Delta 8 is not generally something that you just naturally come across in the plants, generally produced or synthesized. And what I can do in my multi-million dollar lab and DEA scheduled and FDA registered building is not the same that I can do in my garage. And also validating what's not left in there and what is left in there is wildly different between my garage and my office.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And Kellen, I want to ask you first and then go back to Matt. When Matt talks about not naturally occurring in the plant, so how does that work? What does that really mean?
Delta 8 is not part of the metabolic pathway that is responsible for the formation of cannabinoids in the cannabis sativa plant. So it is not a product that is generated through the biochemical reactions that are standard for generating like Delta 9.
It's similar to CBN, right? Like there's no enzyme that produces CBN, or at least not one that we found.
Yeah, totally. And I honestly, the CBN thing is a quick little tangent. I haven't seen any CBN in really old material either, that I've seen certain claims in literature. And I mean, I've handled material and tested it personally that's been a decade old and zero CBN. The only CBN I ever saw was I had to actually synthetically convert Delta 9 to CBN through prolonged exposure to a lot of kinetic energy, right?
So yeah, if you look at the really old papers, the Machulin papers in the 60s and some of those even before that in the 40s, they don't ever refer to it as cannabis sativa. They always refer to it as hash cannabis or cannabis hash, which leads me to suspect that they're probably referring to the actual hash product, which is generally baked and has a little bit of oil in it. So I think that's probably why they're more readily finding that in, 70, 80 years ago, as opposed to this greenery that in modern times has grown to be 30% THC. So,
hey, thanks for clearing that up. I was really wondering about that for a long time. So also, that makes a lot of sense.
Who reads literary papers from the 40s? Like, really? Well, was that a real claim?
There's a blackout on literature, right? From like the mid 60s all the way through until like 5 years ago, essentially. And so there's just no cannabis because it was so outlawed because it was obviously just so terrible that we couldn't even do research. I mean, Machulin found that CBD attenuated seizures in 1981, right? And then it was 22 years before they approved that as a drug to treat childhood epilepsy. It's just because of a perception, right? There's nothing about the plant that makes it bad.
So do you think Delta 8 is a cannabinoid that's here to stay, or are you kind of leaning towards this is a fad?
Oh, well, so I read online, and so, take that with a grain of salt, that there are fewer reports of people having what would be considered like a THC psychosis. And I would assume that's because of its lower activity. People who kind of chronically hit a vaporizer pen, maybe, just out of habit, as opposed to someone who like isn't intending to like smoke. If you were to do that with Delta 9, then you would be taking in a lot more THC that's going to your brain and causing you to have a lot more of these psychedelic effects, as opposed to this Delta 8, which doesn't seem to have quite the same attenuation. So if you were someone who chronically smoked for anxiety or something like that, I could see how that might be better than D9, just because it's like a dosage factor, right? Like the first time you do mushrooms, you don't want to be doing 15 grams of mushrooms and being left alone in the woods, right? So don't do that with anything.
That sounds like that hits home pretty close to you. So I hope someone did.
Matt, that's the second time you talked about the binding affinity. I have a random thought. So when you eat Delta 9, your body metabolizes it, and technically it's 11-hydroxy that binds with your receptors, and it has a higher binding affinity, which is why people tend to kind of get a little more stoned when they eat edibles for the first time versus getting into their bloodstream through inhalation. Does Delta 8 form the same molecule? Just now it's Delta 8 11-hydroxy. Do you know anything about that?
So I haven't read anything specifically on the metabolic pathway, but just as a speculation, the metabolite that a urinalysis looks at binds specifically to the 11-hydroxy metabolite, and you fail a piss test with Delta 8. So I would assume that it's the 11-hydroxy position still. It seems like there was at least one report in mice that it makes the 11-hydroxy. So that also would contribute to the idea that you get more of a body high, where it kind of goes to your nerve cells systemically, as opposed to just going to your brain, where if you have a rapid overlay of a given compound, then it's going to go straight to your brain, right? But if you ingest it slowly through your stomach, then it has more of a potentiated effect throughout the whole body and systemic release. And so I think that that may have some of the altered effects that are described as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome. My question's a follow-up to the previous one is, you were referring to Delta 8 with anxiety could be better suited in that. Can someone go into a dispensary and ask for a certain product that has that? Is that going to be one? I know that there's certain sites that you wouldn't recommend purchasing over the line for potential gray areas, but if you were in a store, maybe not so bad. But in a dispensary store, if I'm looking for a D8 product, can I find one readily available, or what do you think about that?
I mean, I'm in Texas, so it's always a weird question of what we can find, right? Because of course, anything that's a gray area will definitely be in stores here. But if you're in a legal state, then it's kind of a question of, well, why, right? Like, one, why go with something that, you know, it has to be chemically altered in order to produce it from someone who may or may not be sketchy? Until there's regulation in the industry, the less steps between me and the product are probably the best number of steps. So like, until there's regulation, I wouldn't really personally be super hyped on it. But if you're in a state where it's not legal and you're interested in trying, then you can definitely find them. And I would just recommend going online and looking at the more reputable brands, or just, you know, being judicious with your where you spend your money.
As always.
In Colorado, it's not, I can speak honestly that it is not in any dispensaries. I know a couple companies that tried to launch D8 products and they failed miserably. No one buys them. I mean, at the end of the day, people go in and exactly what Matt just said. Why am I going to buy this weird D8 thing that I don't really understand when I can literally buy that Delta 9 thing that I know is going to get me high? And I know it came from a plant, and that's what the cannabis industry is about. So like, I don't know what this Delta 8 thing you're trying to sell me is.
But so I think it's not
any dispensaries here.
If there's like not enough evidence for any like clinical value in it, then there's probably enough evidence for like a wellness or nutraceutical marketing for it. And there probably will be like a D8 CBN blend that's like, relax and go to sleep this evening, right? Like whatever sort of marketing you want to put on it. I mean, people claim that CBN puts you to sleep. I mean, I don't know. The only CBN gummies I've ever had also had melatonin, so that's a little bit unfair.
If you wanted to sell that product, you would market it as like mom of three kids after school.
And yeah.
It would crush.
Yeah.
CBN puts you to sleep.
The chill high, right? Like you're not 20 anymore, right? You're not going out and getting blazed. You're just getting a little high.
You're just like feeling good. Just like yeah. A couple glasses of wine on the couch feeling good.
Exactly.
All right. Listener question. Synthetic cannabinoids. What do you say to the people who are wondering if a cannabinoid is not in its original form and it's been altered, it's not exactly pure. And that means I prefer not to have that. Is that something you would agree with, disagree with? And is that something you think is going to be a common issue in the space?
Well, I have a linear thought process on this. A molecule is a molecule. There is something to be said for what would be called polypharmaceuticals, where there's multiple cannabinoids and that could have an effect on them. I'm not going to like argue about that. But a molecule is a molecule. And if anything, what we make is more pure than what you're going to get out of the plant, because we can guarantee that there are other things that may be hidden under a given chromatogram or under a given mass spec or anything like that, right? Because we don't have things underneath our given molecule because we never introduce them. Whenever you're trying to isolate it out of a plant that is made up of hundreds to thousands of different molecules, then, you know, if you're talking about wanting a pure molecule, then you just can't be a synthetic route, because it ensures that you're going to get what you want. Now, do I trust anyone with that? Absolutely not. The things that I play with and the things that I use and the things that are used in everyday chemicals like Tylenol, they are incredibly toxic. There are things in there that will straight up, like if you were to have contamination, people would die, which is why we have these rules in place. Right. And we have to follow these FDA and DEA rules in order to validate and keep documentation. So that way, if in 5 years someone has one of our pills and then they die from it because it was contaminated with something, then they still get to sue us. Like until the rest of the industry is that way, then I wouldn't want to go with off the shelf synthetics. But nature doesn't make things for us. Right. We find things in nature that work for us. And the cannabinoids are things that we found in nature. We endogenously produce cannabinoids. Those are the ones that we make and use and are intended for us. Everything else are things we found along the way. And to assume that those cannabinoids are the best ones for the things that we intend is kind of naive, in my opinion.
Let's talk about Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. That's right. No more excuses. get your lazy ass off the couch, go start a podcast. There's the creation tool that allows you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Once again, no more excuses. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Could it be easier? Even better, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. That's right. They're paying us for this ad. Thank you very much, Anchor. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started now.
I think that was really well said.
Yeah, I think it's really well said. So to continue on that is, how does one know in a dispensary whether or not the products and the components within the product that they're purchasing have been altered, synthetic, or like would one make that decision?
Unfortunately, I don't think you know.
You don't. And that I was just going to kind of piggyback on what you were saying about purity, Matt, that and items being hidden in chromatographs and kind of that whole line of thinking is that.
Or like heavy metals, right? That's another aspect. And I mean, at the Emerald Conference last year, the topic of vaporizer cartridges came up, and there was the guy who developed the apparatus using different vaporizer cartridges. Well, if you use the wrong type of heating coil, there's, I think, some heavy metal. There was a heavy metal that burns out of it whenever it gets too hot. So if you overheat your coil, then now you're vaporizing a heavy metal that's not in your plant even. So it's not even just the ingredients themselves. Like, device development is also something that needs to be regulated in this industry, right? Because things like the vaporizer cartridge, well, that's not, like, it depends on what you put on that coil, right? Like, on the base of your cartridge. Or if there is a polymer you didn't account for, you took one that goes up to 360 because most people run their rigs at 340. Well, this guy runs his at 375 and it burns it out. Well, it was a cyanopolymer and now you killed him. Like, these types of things are not monitored out in the free market the way that people would suspect. And even people who are intending to do good and not intending any harm can still cause a great deal of it.
Yeah, what's there's the hexavalent chromium and trivalent chromium? One of them is like absolutely toxic.
Yeah, the hexavalent, that's the Aaron Brockovich molecule.
So they're actually, in China, a lot of the vape pens early on were plating the coils with hexavalent chromium.
Yeah, because chromium is what you put over your steel to make sure it stays shiny and doesn't corrode whenever it gets hot. And then if it gets too hot, then the chromium burns off.
Exactly. So I guess at the end, the positive note out of that whole situation is that at least Colorado now is taking a stance on, instead of testing the oil for a COA when you're putting it in a vape pen, they're now requiring companies to submit a fully packaged cartridge, and then they heat it up, and then they're analyzing the vapor that's being off of the cartridge to then try to catch that exact thing that we were just talking about.
Which, like, is the point of taxing an industry in the first place, right? Which Colorado has done great things with their tax money, don't get me wrong, but the fact that that's something that they're just now addressing and has billions of dollars is not fair to consumers and citizens who are like, trust their government to enforce a market that's going to like have products that aren't going to kill them. Right. Like, and it doesn't matter what product that is. Right. Like, that's what our Consumer Safety Protection Board is supposed to be for.
I think, Matt, like, to expand on that, you told us one time, like, perfectly said, you've got people who don't know what they're doing, making rules about things that they don't know. And it just accentuates that area that, in even in Colorado, where all these good things that they're doing is, they probably don't have somebody in place that understands conceptually all these things that are happening. Because if so, likely this sort of testing would have been in place long ago.
Right. Yeah. So, and I mean, and it's different standards to different industries, like a wellness industry versus nutraceutical, right? Like, nutraceutical has like an FDA definition. But you also can't sell these things as food because, well, CBD has been recognized as a drug. And due to that, the FDA is never going to say that it's not a drug because they've granted that license. And it has, like, basically because they won't go back on their word. And that's how governments work. The rest of them, someone's going to have to volunteer to do a safety study, right? I mean, they've done it with CBD and it takes, like, I mean, I'm pretty sure the mice must be throwing clots before they actually die from the CBD toxicity because of how much they inject them with. But, like, I mean, these other molecules are no more toxic, but no one wants to spend the $5 million to prove that these molecules are generally recognized as safe to sell them as a food or a nutraceutical.
No, and it's tough, right? And I think it's like hindsight's 20/20, right? A lot of these people, they want the industry to be present. The people voted on it, and then they now are like trying to slam a square peg into a round hole, being like, okay, well, consumers want it, and now we have to go through and figure out the proper ways to do all of these testings and verify that it's safe. And I mean, it costs a ton of money, and not only that, but it requires, it's not like any average Joe can go conduct something like that. You know what I mean? So it requires really skilled individuals to take time out of their life to facilitate that kind of research.
What about time? How long does that, I mean, the missing factor in that, sure, all those other things are very hard, but time cannot be accelerated no matter how much money or people you have. Like, you can't accelerate time in order to see the development over a, like a duration.
Yeah. And as far as like getting new molecules out into the, I'm worried that they're going to turn it into a game as well of, well, so CBDV is in trials right now. GW has that as essentially, well, CBDV has a faster uptake than CBD. So it should be better at stopping seizures than CBD, presumably. Well, GW has just, well, they are hiring like 15 chemists in the UK, and they're starting a full new branch related to their cannabinoid drugs. But they currently, Epidiolex is a phytobotanical drug that's grown indoors and like, it's extremely stringent rules about how it has to be grown. And I mean, like the same sorts of like test specs that you have for our pharmaceutical processes, but with growing a plant. But now they're hiring all these chemists. Well, I'm assuming it's because they can't, you know, isolate enough CBDV to support their clinical trials. And so they're going to have to synthesize it. But if they do that and they call that one, if they call that a drug and give it a drug license, then that's another molecule that will never be able to be sold like over the counter, things like that. I mean, there are obviously like slight alterations that you can do to be different, but then you're again talking about synthetics. And so the longer that you wait, the more people like GW are going to come along and be like, well, while it's not worth it to try to put this one molecule through clinicals, I can make this formulation. And if I'm ahead of everyone else and I make it a drug, then it stops anyone else from being incentivized to do it. And it's all about money. So,
yeah, it's going to be an interesting path to see who kind of takes that route and who doesn't. And at the end of the day, you're right, right? It is all about money and how to position yourself with a moat to continually protect yourself from the evolution of an industry that needs a ton of research and super smart people to kind of figure out how to protect the consumers. Because unfortunately, we walk into dispensaries and we just assume that the products behind the counter are safe.
They got a label on it. It means it's safe, right? Someone literally put a label on it, man.
There's also an interesting DEA perspective, which they've kind of walked back a little bit, but we're just playing the game right now because until they really get their rule set in stone, we're unsure. But that if it's phytobotanically sourced, CBD is unscheduled, but if it's synthetic, it might be scheduled. And so we're doing a lot of our work with CBD isolate in order just to be safe, right? Like, I do a lot of my research with that instead of using our synthetic stuff. One, it's also a lot cheaper to get CBD phyto isolate than it is to get synthetic. And a guy told me that he could get me a COA. And I said, what do you mean? And he was like, well, how pure does it need to be? And I'm like, no, I'm buying this. And he didn't just, yeah, I did not buy it. So, but like, I'm talking to this guy and he wants to tell me what purity he's going to say his isolate is based off of what I want to put on my label.
And yeah. That right there is, there's just so many bad actors right now out in the space. And that's why you can't really trust a lot of things out there.
So let's go to this. It's prediction time. Has Delta 8, and Matt, you go first. Has Delta 8 reached its peak of potential? And if not, what is the potential by the time Kellen has determined we're at federal adult use by 2024? 20, something 24. Super pessimistic as Kellen's chosen his time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a race, right? Like, again, it's not going to be popular in any state where D9 is legal. Like if you don't want to be as high, don't smoke as much. Like, if you particularly like it, maybe there is a niche market. Again, like I said, people who are like chronic smokers and just want to have something that is tastes like a vape pen. And I mean, D8 is more stable. It's not going to turn that nasty black color on you. It doesn't just suck oxygen out of the air. It's significantly more stable.
So you think it's reached its peak?
No, because I think there's plenty of Midwest states that aren't depressed enough yet. So,
Kellen, your thoughts?
I think it's peaking right now. I think maybe another year, maybe 12 to 18 months, I think. Once New York and kind of some of these larger states actually have a rec market available, I think then you'll actually see it start to die off, right? Like, you can go get Delta 9 products in New Jersey. I think that's going to eliminate a lot of the East Coast market for the Delta 9 right now, right? And so, or the Delta 8, excuse me.
Well, but then you got to, but look at Texas, right? I'm in Austin. I am surrounded on every border by a place that has legal marijuana, including Mexico.
Yeah.
So I can't see D9 legally outside of work for, 800 miles. I could see D8 sticking around here for a minute, because I also don't necessarily foresee Greg Abbott doing literally anything that Texans want.
I have a friend in Texas who was looking for edibles, right? And someone sent him a website where he could buy D8, and he goes, "Will it get me high?" Right? And the response was, "Yeah." And then he goes, "Will I get in trouble if I get caught with this?" And then the answer was, "Maybe." And he's like, "Wait a minute. Like, I can buy it online, but I might be able to get caught." I was like, "Can I just get dealt? Like, can I just get like regular edibles?" And they're like, "No." And he's like, "Okay, so like, I'm like gonna get this, but I might get in trouble." Like, very weird, but like, you're right. And to kind of to take the prediction is, I think what you said is perfect. States that don't have access, and a lot of states are gonna be converting into adult use, they're not gonna need the Delta 8. But I'm gonna take a different tangent and say that there'll be some concoction, some formulation that uses a little D8, just based on what you said, mixed with some other minor cannabinoids, building some new beautiful entourage effect with some terpenes and some fun stuff all mixed up. And someone's going to market the shit out of that product. And it's going to have some proprietary formulation that it's going to elicit some feeling, and it's going to smash. Because
yeah, I think it'll have a place in the wellness or nutraceutical.
Yeah, it's one of those like super rare power food things that you just combine it with like oats and blueberries and some random seeds, and you put it in your yogurt, and like you start your day off flying.
Yeah, and there's also the question of what do we do with all of this CBD?
Right, you make Delta 8.
Or Delta
10.
That's easy. I don't know what Delta 10 is. So like that'll have to be another episode, because I've got
that one's up and coming. That one's up and coming. I've just started seeing.
Have you had any? Have you ever had a Delta 10 experience?
I have not. Have you?
Yeah.
What does that
What's
even
it
mean?
Like?
Well, so interestingly,
do you get high? Can you give me some basis, or am I just gonna have to go into this blind?
Well, whenever I tried smoking it, and I didn't really feel like I felt lightheaded, but apart from that, I didn't feel a whole lot. As far as super high. And then I was like, all right, well, I'll just pour it on a cookie and I'll fucking eat it. And so I ate it, and I straight up like, I mean, granted, I probably had like close to 300 milligrams, but I straight up tripped balls in my hotel room.
So we'll have to have you come on to talk about Delta 10 and kind of give the listeners a more of a basic understanding, including myself, on exactly what that is, how that fits, and how you went from tripping balls to getting high, like in a very quick change, is something I'm very intrigued by. So the last question we ask everyone starting a couple weeks ago is, when was the last time you consumed cannabinoids?
About 3 hours ago.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for your time, Matt. Appreciate it. And we're going to definitely have to keep you in the loop when we expand this Delta 8 conversation, maybe have you back for some more. So thank you so much for your time.
For sure.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey there, my name is Leah Babrudi, and I'm the founder and host of Canna Chicks Podcast, where I discuss cannabis, psychedelics, and other natural medicines. I not only interview people who use them as treatment for different conditions, but also the entrepreneurs who share their knowledge on how they built their businesses. If this sounds interesting to you, give my show a listen. I'm sure you'll learn something that'll surprise you.